So it's a beautiful morning, a great day to embrace multiculturalism, don't you think? So I was inspired to give a sermon by my experiences in the three different race and racism workshops I attended through the UU Church. I realized that as a person of a different race, I should share my story and try to reach out and connect with people. Part of embracing multiculturalism is connecting with people of different cultures and coexisting peacefully. Being a Cambodian American, I'll first share my story of being an immigrant and then share what I learned from the workshops and some things from my own experience. My sermon speaks to the first three of our UU 7 principles: the inherent worth and dignity of every person, 2, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, 3, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. First, let me tell you a little bit about Cambodia. Cambodia is a Southeast Asian country next to Thailand and Vietnam. It's down there below China. So I was born in Phnom Penh, the capital city of Cambodia. Cambodia is a country just separate from its neighbors and has its own government and language. And the language is Khmer. In the 1800s, it was a French colony, so many older Americans, like my parents, know how to speak French. I'm wearing a silk Cambodian-style outfit, and my mom and I wear outfits like these for weddings, for New Year celebrations, which New Year is coming up next month, and for visits to the Buddhist temple in Long Beach. In 1975, the Khmer Rouge, led by Pol Pot, started the genocide, intending to rid the country of Western influence, return to an agriculture society, and purify the population. From 1975 to 1979, the Khmer Rouge killed more than 1 million Cambodian people, about 25% of the population. They forced people from the cities to relocate to labor camps in the countryside. My dad worked for the U.S. Embassy, so he was allowed to evacuate the country with his family when the embassy closed, when the Khmer Rouge started taking over. He wanted his parents, his 9 siblings, my mom and my sister, to all leave the country together because he knew that something bad was coming. But one of my aunts didn't want to leave, and many people didn't think that things would go so wrong so quickly. My grandmother didn't want to leave her alone, so she stayed, and so the rest of the siblings stayed. This is a picture of me when I was a baby with my mom, and then a picture of my family as we were emigrating. My family was flown to Thailand, and we stayed in the refugee camp there for a month. Then we were allowed to immigrate to the U.S. My dad's Cambodian friend in Long Beach sponsored us, and we started our new life here in Long Beach. I don't remember any of my refugee experience. I was 3 years old, but I do remember my preschool year and my first grade here in Long Beach. During this time, my dad worked any job he could, including washing cars. Although my mother was a high school teacher in Cambodia, she took minimum wage jobs while going to adult school to improve her education. This is my family when we were settled in Long Beach. And this is me when I was 5, giving my dad attitude for making me pose for another picture. Looking back, I realize how lucky it was that my family escaped in time. My mom remembers the time before we fled. She would hear bombs near our home. Our dad had dug a pit in the backyard where we could stay and seek shelter during the bombings. If my family had stayed, we surely would have died or suffered great tragedy. Both my parents were teachers, and my dad had connections with the U.S. Embassy, so definitely my parents had everything the Khmer Rouge wanted to get rid of: Western influence, educated people, and people of Chinese ancestry. After first grade, we moved to Norwalk, California. My parents eventually found better-paying jobs working for the L.A. County Department of Social Services. My Dad never forgot his family, though. He was always looking for ways to find out if they were alive and where they were. In 1981, he spent a year looking for his family in the refugee camps in Thailand and Cambodia. I was 9 years old, and I missed him so much. He would call us to check in and let us know what was going on. And even though I wanted to talk to him so badly, I could never stop crying on the phone. I get emotional thinking about it every time. The effects of being separated from a parent can last a lifetime. Anyway, he found his mother, three sisters, and their families, and his youngest brother. His father and other family members had died at the hands of the Khmer Rouge. Occasionally, at family get-togethers, we hear of their harrowing stories of hardship and survival. Did anyone watch the movie The Killing Fields? My uncle says that he escaped the camp on his own as a 17-year-old and had to navigate through the jungle and fields of Cambodia to find safety. He says that he should have pitched the idea for the movie himself because the experience was so similar. He vows never to return to Cambodia because he's so traumatized. So I grew up as a minority in Southern California in the 80s. We were bullied now and then, but some or most kids are teased for some reason or other. Kids would do the slanted eye thing, call us chinks or nips, yell out gibberish to mock our language. They didn't care where we were from. We just looked different. My sister's first grade teacher liked her, but kept calling my sister her little China doll. In high school, I was fortunate enough to have a small group of friends and supportive teachers and counselors. During this time, my family became naturalized citizens, and I had a chance to change my name, but since my name is a combination of my parents' names, I didn't want to change it. But I do have a Starbucks name, and I call myself Terry there for ease. So, I started to learn about Christianity from the TV Sunday shows my mom would watch. Although culturally, my family was Buddhist, and we went to the temple in Long Beach for different occasions, my mother was also interested in Christianity. I think she was seeking heaven in any way she could. In high school and at UC San Diego, I joined Christian groups and attended Christian non-denominational churches. After 6 months of working at my first job after UC San Diego, my mom had a massive stroke, which left her left side weak. I became her primary caregiver at the age of 24. My parents had divorced when both my sister and I left for college. This was a tough time all around. I had lost my faith in God and in people, and I was the only person to help my mother through her grief and had suddenly become responsible for my newly disabled mother. But I was inspired to become a physical therapist as I watched my mother go through rehab. After 2.5 years of caring for my mother on my own, my sister had finished pharmacy school out of state and moved back to California to help me. This gave me a chance to go to grad school at USC, and I got my Doctor of Physical Therapy degree in 2001. Thank you. I didn't have to pay to get in, just when I was there. I recently found my diploma in my files at home. I've been working as a PEDS physical therapist since I graduated. I love my career. It's meaningful and fun. I'm so grateful to be able to help children with disabilities maximize their potential for functional movement. I am proud to be a public servant working for the LA County Department of Public Health, and I give back to my community in many ways by volunteering. In 2012, I joined a medical mission with the Cambodian Health Professionals Association of America. We went to Koh Kong, a rural area in Cambodia, to help deliver medical care for 5 days. Each volunteer has to pay their own travel and food expenses. This is me on the left, and then on the right were the Cambodian health students who helped translate for us. Every morning, at least 800 people would be lined up in front of the gates, no matter how hot it was. People came from all around the region to seek free health care, including minor surgeries and dental procedures. We took a side trip to a nearby island to do a side mission, a mini mission, and had to travel by boat. It was all a humbling experience. I told myself I would never complain of first world problems again. I've been to Cambodia twice now, and during my first trip in 2010, I got emotional thinking that this is the land of my ancestors, and this is a whole country of Cambodian people who looked like me. I had never seen so many before. I got to see where my parents were born, and I got to see the amazing ruins, like the World Heritage Site, Angkor Wat. So I met some distant relatives I didn't know about, and they were warm and accepting. At one of the tourist sites, one of the guards asked my relative, "Why are you hanging out with a Korean person?" He meant me. Even though I was with my people, I really wasn't, huh? We got to visit the countryside. This is a restaurant in the midst of a field of lotus plants. We visited Jung Ik, a memorial site located at one of the Khmer Rouge's concentration camps. This tower houses thousands of skulls and bones from people who were killed there. Back in the States, I've been involved with an international service organization called Seroptimus International since 2009, and I belong to the Artesia Cerritos chapter. Our mission is to improve the lives of women and girls through programs leading to social and economic empowerment. One of the activities that I help organize is human trafficking awareness events at the Cerritos Mall several times a year. As time has passed, I've experienced less outright racism. But I was surprised in 2013 when I traveled with some Asian friends to Rhode Island. We were walking around the university area in the evening, and a group of young Caucasian well-dressed men started mocking us with Chinese-sounding gibberish as we passed them. I couldn't believe how immature it was. I felt like it was elementary school all over again. Other incidents have been more subtle, like on two instances in the past few years. Grown Caucasian men would cut in front of me in a line of people without saying anything. It made me feel invisible, but I took it as a sign that I didn't need or want popcorn or cake that badly, and I just left the line. I saved myself some unnecessary calories. Now I would like to speak about what I've learned from my own experience and what I've learned from the race and racism workshops. I attended three workshops, one led by Chris Crass, Celia Young here at UCLB, and then a workshop by Reverend Cupono and Reverend Klein at the Pacific Unitarian Church. These were all dynamic, inspiring speakers. So first I wanted to talk about being aware of your own privilege, earned or unearned. That could be race, age, gender, socioeconomic status, education. Being a female minority, I didn't think that I had much privilege, but I learned that my age, my socioeconomic status, and my education do give me privilege. But for me, privilege comes with a sense of responsibility to help others. Also, examining your own privilege helps you understand how systemic racism can happen and how it can be passed down from generation to generation. Second, be a good listener. Kevin Ford's recent sermon emphasized the importance of listening. In Celia's workshop, I learned that when you are trying to get to know a person, you have to ask questions but resist interrupting, even if it is to acknowledge that you've experienced something similar. She had us practice this one-on-one, and many of us had a hard time doing this. Do you ever find yourself in a conversation with someone and start to share your own story, even though the other person hasn't even finished theirs? It's hard to resist interrupting, but try it out. Being a good listener requires you to put your ego aside. It is a sign of respect, and you'll find out much more about the other person. And then, don't make assumptions about people without facts. And of course, don't generalize. In the workshop at Pacific Unitarian Church, they showed a black and white picture of a man sitting down and three to four people of different ages sitting and standing around the room. We got into groups and had to come up with our own interpretations of the scene. So take a look at these pictures. You are probably trying to come up with different stories about how these people are related, what's going on. The point of the exercise was that other than facts, we shouldn't have made all the assumptions we made because they were stories based on our own experiences. It's better to find out the real story by interacting with others. Next, just because you now know me more, it doesn't mean that all Cambodians are similar to me. We all have different experiences. Please don't compare us to each other and don't expect us to all know each other. Last week, I took my mom to see a new doctor who was really nice to us. She asked us about our ethnicity, and I told her. She said that she worked with a Cambodian female nurse. She went on, "I must say, Cambodian women are so nice." I didn't know what to say, but I thought to myself, I guess I shouldn't be the one to ruin this impression of us, or should I? And please, don't expect that I'll know everything related to Cambodia. I'm only an expert on being me, and even then, I'm a work in progress. Make that effort to connect with someone different from you. Go out of your comfort zone. Since I'm a shy introvert, going up to people I don't know or speaking to a large group like this is nerve-wracking and out of my comfort zone. But I'm trying. Here's a note on trying to connect with people who look different from you. Start with talking about things you have in common instead of what's your ethnicity? Where are you from? You could start with what's your experience been like at this church? It's a fine line between pointing out differences and appreciating someone's uniqueness and wholeness as a person. I remember one of Reverend Rick's sermons last year in which one of his points was that it is the change in our culture and society that drives the change in our laws. We change hearts and minds by connecting with people. The easiest way to connect with people is to spend time together, find commonalities, and talk. I heard this story on National Public Radio last year about an African-American jazz musician, Daryl Davis, who had convinced over 200 KKK members to renounce their robes. It all started after one of his gigs. A white man had seen him perform and went up to him to let him know how impressed he was that a black man could play the piano like Jerry Lee Lewis. Over time, they developed a friendship, and the white man who was in the KKK quit the KKK. Daryl went on to learn as much as he could about the KKK and intentionally tried to meet members one by one, asking them, "How can you hate me when you don't even know me? How can you hate me when you don't even know me?" Powerful, right? The solution is to get to know someone different from you. Human relationships are not always easy. We need to communicate, respect each other, and cut each other some slack. It moves me that there are people humble enough to realize that they don't know everything and seek to learn something new. Some of us grew up in families where racism was acceptable, but we said, "No, this is not how I want to live my life." Kudos to all of you here today. You're listening with open hearts and open minds and hopefully ready to connect. Several years ago, I read this book that a friend had on her bookshelf. It was titled, "How to Talk So Your Kids Will Listen, and Listen So Your Kids Will Talk." After I finished the book, I wept. It was so beautiful that people cared so much about kids that they would study and write about effective communication with kids. And it was so beautiful that there are people out there who would take the time to learn and change their behavior in order to connect better with their kids. This is how I feel about the people at this church. We seek to find better ways to connect and help each other so that we can create a better world for all of us. I was born in a different country on the other side of the globe, but I have found my spiritual home here at UUCLB, and my friends and the people here at this church are my kind of people. Thank you for listening.